Shalom, and welcome to the Remnant Radio Hour, where we're living and learning a restoration lifestyle. This is Nitza Moshe, and we are going to continue today with part two regarding the solar eclipse and some things about scripture, if we get to that this week, and we'll continue next week if everything goes well. That's all assuming that I have electricity in this area where I'm at and internet. So that may be an issue next week, but if not, then we'll come back the following week. So this is part two again. We're going to talk about the total solar eclipse. And maybe some of you, since you heard about last week, have started to see things come in your mail, maybe with your electric bill, power bill, city water bill. I got one here just the last week. And I've got a report from Livingstones in Kentucky, and I want to kind of share some of those with you. These total solar eclipse, and one of the reasons it's such a big deal, besides some other things that maybe Hebrew Roots people are looking into with the Tav crossing and then 7 years later another one coming back, is that it's only going to be over the continental United States, starting here in Oregon, going across the midsection and down towards just northeast of Atlanta off off the coast there in South Carolina, going over St. Louis. And so here's a quote. And again, this is one of the websites that I shared. And if you would like the notes, I have, I don't know, 20 pages of notes, and I have a bunch of different docs and articles and things that I had sent out to those who had asked for it. So if you would like those notes, it's Nitza, N-I-T-Z-A, at remnantremedy.net. And also last week's show, part one, is posted at remnantremedy.net/radio. And if you look under Moedim, you will see part one posted there. And this website, make sure I can get it up here. It's called, there's a lot of information on this site. It's called www.greatamericaneclipse.com. And so this week with our water bill, we got our city is starting next Thursday. That's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The eclipse is Monday morning. Has a full time. They're making a big thing out of this. And around, just about around the clock, they have events. They're bringing in people from the university to talk about the eclipse. They're having blow up playhouses and, you know, beer gardens and bands and all kinds of things. So many cities, college stadiums, etc., are filling up. And so, you know, we want to, well, where should I start? Let me think about this. Okay, so I talked to someone who lived downtown Salem. It's coming right over Salem. Many of the people are not going to work, and they have already told them that starting next Wednesday, that's a week, that's just like 4 or 5 days from now, 6 days, next Wednesday will begin the influx. And in this area, they're expecting a couple million. And across the nation, it's 12 billion estimated. They're going to be traveling from the north of the United States and from the south to the center bands where the view of totality of the total solar eclipse will occur. And so they're being told to expect Wednesday to Wednesday next week of extreme traffic. And for anyone who's listening that's in the city, that in the cities across this country, like if you're in St. Louis or Boise, I've been to Boise and never seen a traffic problem there, but maybe there is. But certainly there is in the Portland-Salem area. Surely there is maybe in the northeast of Atlanta, Nashville, you know, there's a lot of traffic on a normal basis. And so we are, you know, going to see this even more so. We already have issues, but they are opening the parks and allowing people to come and camp. So people are coming to camp and they're coming to party to see the eclipse. Now let's take a look at the other side. Livingstones over in Kentucky sent me a few articles from her local, information and her, I think it was in her power bill or monthly power magazine that comes in for the power company. She's in Kentucky. And it says here, I'll just read a little bit of it. It says, the Great American Eclipse will blot out the sun along a narrow sweeping path from Oregon to South Carolina on August 21st. Astronomers pinpoint a farm 11 miles northwest of Hopkinsville, Kentucky, as the point of the greatest eclipse. This is happening to farms here. Now, what is interesting when you go on and look at some of these things that she has sent me is, it evidently seems to have found out here that for those of you from, you know, that are definitely in your 50s or 60s or older, you can probably remember who Edgar Cayce was. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on him, but, you know, he's involved with a lot of New Age, maybe witchcraft. And evidently he lived on a farm and is from this area. And they believe, okay, this is the other side, folks. They believe that this eclipse, here's the title of this article, this eclipse could bring little green aliens back to Kentucky, okay? So I think what we don't realize, a lot of influx besides, you know, astronomers or people who are just really interested in this eclipse is that there's the other side. You know, Yahweh's people look at the moon and the stars and the sun as signs in the heavens, and we use them for the Moedim, for his feasts and appointments. But the other side, you know, they got their thing going. So I find that quite interesting, you know. So, and that's part of the problem with the influx of the type of people that may be coming in. And, you know, just like downtown, we have all these beer gardens going. So anyway, here's a quote from this website where you can find a lot of information and look up your state. Particularly if you're in a state of totality. It's called, again, I will give it to you, thegreatamericaneclipse.com. And one of the things here, this is a quote here, it says that on August 21st is the day of the Great American Eclipse, and the hype around is already starting to reach a fever pitch. It is called the Great American Eclipse because this will be the first total solar eclipse that is ever only visible in the United States. And let me finish. I'm trying to keep track of many windows here on the website. Okay, in other words, since the United States became a nation, there has never been a total eclipse that was only visible here and nowhere else. And this will be the first total solar eclipse to cross from the West Coast to the East Coast in 99 years. So for those that love astronomy, this is bigger than the Super Bowl. Now, what's interesting is I talked to some people in Montana, which is 10 hours away, and it's north east of here in the Salem-Portland area, and they don't know anything about it, okay? So that's kind of interesting. And what I find amazing is it's sneaking up on a lot of people. They still don't really know about it, and then the ones that do don't realize what's going on with the businesses and the infrastructure. The other thing I want to re-mention to you is, and if you go to my Facebook, Nitza Moshe, I posted, I want you to not miss this. If you're looking up in the skies, there is this Perseus meteorite, and some say this is one of the greatest meteorite showers of this. It does come every year, but they believe that this is going to be major this year. So look up in the heavens. It's supposed to peak on the 12th. So, you know, already starting, we got a wonderful picture here last week from Oregon off the coast. So look up in the sky and listen to last week's show to find out what the significance may be for Perseus representing the one who breaks the bonds or delivers the bride. You can listen to that. I do want to mention for those who listen and who participate and help support this ministry and this radio show, we do take donations, but the main way that we are supported is through the purchases at remnantremedy.net. And if you'll look tomorrow, starting tomorrow until the solar eclipse on the 21st, we will have a 15% off sale on essential oils and probably EMF shields. So you might want to look for that. I'll post it on the page. And it might go out in the newsletter, but sometimes that doesn't happen as fast as posting on the front page. Okay, so what do we got? Also on my Facebook page, besides the Perseus meteorites, there is a video there to watch that is put out by a Jewish eye doctor who gives some safety tips on things that you should do or shouldn't do during this eclipse. Now, for most of you who do not live in the area, remember, do not ever look at the sun or the eclipse without the correct safety protection that you need on your eyes. You may, according to the eye specialists and different people that I've read, you may take them off for the 30-second, 1 minute, 2 minute, whatever it is, depending on where you live, to look at it in total darkness, if you want to just get a moment of that. We're going to talk about the phenomena of what to expect here in a minute. One of the things that I think I started to explain last week is, remember, and I want to bring this up. Last week I shared with you that one of the reasons I paid attention to this is because it starts in the sixth month. It's at the sixth month Hodesh, the Rosh Hodesh, the head of when we have the new moon renewal time. And we talked about things that happened during that time. And this is the time of the year, especially from the full moon that we just had up until the new moon of 6 month, which begins, I believe, the 40 days of Awe up until we get to Yom Kippur and Sukkot. And also, I'm not going to go into detail or teaching, but I'm just share with you briefly that I believe through studies, and I think there are many others, that Yeshua, the Mashiach, will return during the Rosh Hodesh, new moon period of what we call Yom Teruah, Rosh Hashanah, of the seventh month. And for those of you out there who are going, oh no, we can't know the day or the hour, well, let me just share something that might be of interest to you. I believe, based on word studies and studies I've done over the years, that when Yeshua is talking, he talks about he's coming like a thief in the night, and you know, he comes at the seventh trumpet. I mean, if we understand the feast, if we understand our Hebrew roots and concepts, then we'll understand what he's talking about. And what happens during a new moon, which is when the moon is dark, we can't see it at night, we get 1 to 2 days where we do not see the moon. And you might even get 3, depending on your view, if there's a mountain in the way or whatever. Because when it gets around the 26th, 27th day, once the crescent has shown, you may not see it. But certainly during what is called the new moon renewal, and different people have different definitions, so you got to kind of be careful about that, is that it's when the moon comes in between the earth and the sun. Okay, if I hope I got that right. Or maybe the opposite, maybe the earth in front. But look it up. I get confused the more I study this. But anyway, the point of the matter is, if you can envision that you have the moon, the earth, and the sun, what happens is they exactly line up. And that's why we can't see the moon. And this is the time period that we call Rosh Hodesh, or the head or the beginning of the month, when it's dark, like a baby in a womb. It's also, if you look in the Hebrew, it's Yom Echad. It's a day of oneness. And, you know, of course, that word Yachad is the same as the word when we have a man and a woman and become one. And Yeshua said, I and the Father are one, and I pray that you are one with us, or one with the Father. And so this whole concept is about unity. It's about the covering of the darkness, of the protection, I believe, of Elohim. And so we have this new birth, and we don't have really a new moon, right? We have a renewed moon, and that's kind of a Hebrew concept that we have to learn when we come out of, you know, just straight Protestantism, Christianity, is we have to have this different mindset. It's not a new moon, it's a renewed moon. Just like the New Testament is the renewed testament, or the renewed covenant. And so I personally believe, you know, research this out and pray about it, but I personally believe that he will come during the Rosh Hodesh, or that dark moon period of Yom Teruah. And that can be 1 to 3 days of darkness, or what we would call there isn't a sun and a moon witness every day, because you don't see the moon at night, right? So you don't have the two witnesses of the day. And so that's counted as a period of time, that Rosh Chodesh is a period of time, which could be 1 or 2 solar days. But I believe on the 7th month, if you go through and study all those things, that you'll maybe agree that that is the time when Yeshua the Messiah is returning. And I believe that when he said, or when it said there, that no man knows the day or hour, it's because when you have that period of time from 1 to 2 days, no man with the naked eye, and I think, remember, this is good enough for a simple shepherd out in the field, with a naked eye, you could not know the exact moment that there was a perfect alignment of the moon, the sun, and the earth, which is the Chag, Yom Chag, or Rosh Chodesh. And of course, as it just slips to the left, or if you're in the northern hemisphere, I believe it moves to the left, and then you end up with a right-handed crescent, which we begin, you know, our new month for our counts. And again, people may argue over the calendar and split those little hairs, but the basic concept is all there. Then we begin. And so I think that the exact moment, okay, and this is why, depending on where it is on the earth and how much it's slipped over from each other and not exactly right on, is why we have new crescent showings at different times around the world. And a website, I do not know. I've never, you know, I don't know if this is a Muslim site. It doesn't look like a Muslim site, but some people say it is. But a site that I have used for like 12 to 15 years, I think, is a site called, and you can just Google it. It's called, just go Moonwatch Einstein, like Albert Einstein Project. And the exact URL is astro.ukho.gov.uk. So that's astro.ukho.gov.uk, Next new moon. Well, you can get there. Well, when you get there, then you can click on it at the top. It'll say next new moon. And the reason I like this site is because I can look at it and it gives me a map of the continents and where the new crescent will be able to be seen. So I use this for helping to count my Momadim when I can't be out every day or every night, or there's no visibility. For instance, we have fires now. I don't even have visibility of the sun or the moon. But you can do this. So what we're going to see is that this this total solar eclipse is coming Monday the 21st, right? And if you had you're not going to be able to see the new crescent, okay? But it's going to be during the 6-month Rosh Chodesh. And then you're going to see that on the 22nd, which is Tuesday, if the conditions are perfect across the band of the country where that total eclipse came, under perfect conditions, the new crescent will be seen. But if you're in, say, Florida, Southern California, Texas, South America, and the very western parts of Africa, from middle down, you're going to maybe be able to see the new crescent. So I just wanted to tell you about that. And then back to us always knowing and seeing that we have problems during this month. For instance, 9/11 came during this time period. I think the Gaza war, I'm pretty sure, came during this time period. I talked about that in last week's show with some other events. As we get towards the 6th month, or in the 6th month, we have these problems. And so I thought it's very interesting. We just had a full moon. And so what did we see yesterday? First of all, our moon was blood red. I'm assuming it's because of the fires. But what do we see in the news this morning when I wake up? And I know I'm supposed to be looking every year towards this time about, because if things are going to get, especially war, violent, it comes this time of the year. I see that Mr. Trump tells the guy over there in North Korea, who says he's going to nuke Guam, that he's going to basically, you know, come full bear back at him. Now, let me share a couple things with you about Guam. I used to live in Guam. I'm a military Air Force brat. I used to scuba dive and play tennis and do really cool things on Guam. But for those of you who do not know, Guam is only approximately 30 miles long and 8 miles wide and shaped like a figure eight. And in the middle is only 4 miles wide. And you can actually be on the beach on one side. And if you're at the right vantage point, you can see across the island to the other side of the ocean. What a lot of people also don't know, and I know that charts have been updated because of satellites, etc., but at one time, Guam was considered to be the tallest mountain in the world. And how is that? It's because it begins at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. And so just the tip of that mountain is what makes the island of Guam. In the middle of that island is nothing but the tip and a jungle. And all of the inhabitants are around the edges, around, you know, basically, you know, it takes like 30 minutes to go from one end of the island to the other end of the island. And if you go all the way around, you know, it might take you maybe 45 minutes. And so my question is that is, you know, if Guam is nuked, which would include all the little other Marianas Islands around there, which is basically the first break of, it would be the first break of our ability to protect ourselves before it reaches Hawaii. I believe Hawaii is a 6-hour flight from the West Coast, and I want to say it's 6 to 8 hours. I remember the flight being 13 to 14 hours, and there was a stop in Hawaii. So, you know, about how far Hawaii is, it's as far from Hawaii. And so my question is, because it's at the, you know, it's the top of the Marianas Trench, et cetera, what would happen? What kind of tidal waves? What kind of issues would happen? Shaking of the earth? How would that affect places around the world if Guam was nuked? And I mean, that's sad, you know, because I don't even know that they could inhabit that to come in to put a base there, but they could use it. They would lose their defense. They'd use they lose their U.S. military defense there between Asia and Hawaii and the western part of the United States. So that's something to really, you know, think about in that situation. So, again, I just want to tell you that last week's show is posted at remnantremy.net. If you want the notes, contact me. And we will post this week's show hopefully by Monday or Tuesday. The documents and the notes there include, I hope to get to this next week, if we can have the show next week. I also included in that some notes on Francis Rolleston, which is a lot of you seem to be really interested in the biblical astronomy. We're maybe going to go more into that on the next show. That is my plan. And also, as I was mentioning, there is a book called The Tribes, 12 Tribes of Israel, and it was written by Gwen Shaw. It is a, you know, about a 3-inch, at least 2-inch, maybe 3 or 4-inch, 3-ring binder book when I got it about 20 years ago. And it, what it is a complete Bible study on each of the 12 tribes of Israel. And so when I had a website years ago and was researching the biblical astronomy and realizing that each tribe, you know, camped around the wilderness tabernacle as a reflection of the heavenly throne, and the constellations lined up and represent each of the 12 tribes. So I also sent out a 12 tribe chart so that when you go through and study any of these biblical astronomy books from Francis Rolleston, and or realize that if you're ever reading E.W. Bullinger, Joseph Seitz, Dr. James Kennedy, and maybe Ruth Beechick, all of these people that you have read or will read on biblical astronomy, they used the lifetime work and notes that Francis Rolleston did. And she, I think she lived, I want to say it's in the notes, I think she lived to be like 88, and it was published like a year or two before her her passing away. And the book is basically in note form. And there is a new book out by Jane S. Poole. I think it's Jane Poole, although on the notes it might say Sue Poole. Maybe that's because I pulled the S out or something. But she wrote a book on the stars, on biblical astronomy, that just got released this year. And she also wrote a book, it took her 14 years at least, to study the life and the biography of Francis Rolleston, who was a British scholar and linguist. And she did all these studies from the Hebrew perspective. So those are things that, you know, I want you to understand. So we're going to take a break right now, because as we're talking about the heavens and the earth and all these wonderful things that Father's created, I thought of a song that I've always loved. And I used to want to put it on my website years ago when I had the astronomy, biblical astronomy site. And I want to just play this song for you. And we'll be right back after this song. So enjoy the next few minutes. So if you want to hear, maybe if you don't have that third day song, it's done by Third Day, you can go to YouTube, and the song's either, sometimes you'll see it as God of the Wonders or Lord of Wonders and Lord of Heaven and Earth. And I just always thought that was a beautiful, beautiful song. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to talk about the phenomena, what to expect if you, you know, do go or you live in the path. We just had another email from someone who lives in North Nashville and is going to be in that path, and people are researching and trying to figure out, you know, what they're going to do. I'm still praying about leaving, actually, and going to Montana, but there's 6 fires, and so the smoke is very bad there also. A lot of people, what I feel bad is for the people who have paid to come to this area, and, you know, unless it really clears up between now and next week, between the clouds that we may or may not have and the smoke, I don't know how we're going to see totality, even be able to see the sun. So I feel, you know, my question is how are people going to react when they, you know, they've been drinking and partying for 4 days from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and they don't get to see their eclipse that they came for. Okay. Maybe they won't came. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll get angry. I don't know. You got Mr. The leader of Korea there, and you know, if you're, let me just ask you, I don't want it's doomsday. So we've got to remember, Allah Elohim, he is in control of everything, and we know, I think almost everybody agreed, that this country and the people living in it are long past overdue for judgment. And I think we see senses of that kind of judgment, the things that have happened. I believe that the day that 9/11 happened, Father lifted his hand right off this country. That's what I saw in the spirit. And he's been very merciful to us. But we need to be prepared. If there's nothing going on now, but if it was me and I was, you know, thinking about doing America in, and I understand Russia and China and Korea really want to do that, then I would pick when 12 million people were not going to be home and concentrated across the major cities of this country. Okay. So I think that everybody should be on their face and praying. And you know, if you don't feel led that way, then that's fine. But I think it's something to really consider. I think it would be wise and prudent to have, you know, water for your toilets, make sure that you have drinking water. Make sure that you have food, and so that you won't have to go anywhere for a while. Don't expect to depend on your cell phone working. And the cell towers are going to be overloaded, from what I understand. Maybe they won't be, but, you know, that influx of people. So pray and consider what you should do. And don't wait too long, because if it's like a hurricane in Florida, there's not going to be anything hardly in the store that you really want between now and next Thursday, okay? So pray about that, because a lot of people are paying no attention other than just seeing something cool. So let's talk about this. Again, at the greatamericaneclipse.com, there's a category underneath the subtitle at the top that says totality. And I just wanted to read through this because I think it's important. And then next week we'll go through the scriptures and the constellations, or the week after, depending on whether or not I have internet. Okay. here are some basic general safety rules. When any part of the sun is visible, do not look at the sun without approved solar filters that are properly used. Don't assume that sunglasses, exposed film, CDs, or any other ad hoc filter is going to be safe. Only use approved solar filters such as eclipse glasses by a reputable source. My bank just last week, when I went through the drive-thru, gave me glasses instead of lollipops and suckers. They had glasses. So, and then we had already bought some at the local hardware store, but we know people that are going to try to come over and see it. So failure to heed this rule may result in permanent eye damage. During the 2 minutes, which can be less, depending on where you're at, it is indeed safe to look directly at the sun's corona with your eyes and through binoculars. But when totality ends and it suddenly brightens, instantly turn your eyes away and put your eclipse glasses or filters back on immediately. Make sure you research this. Some believe that your cameras can be damaged, so make sure that you take into account. I don't know if that means your cell phone. I don't know, but make sure you do some research and find out about that. I mean, can you imagine with all these people live streaming on Facebook alone without the influx of all these people in one general area overloading the cell phone towers, what's going to happen when everybody's got their cell phone out and they're trying to record this, or they have a real live camera and they're trying to upload this over the internet? So think about that. You know, maybe it'll go fine. Maybe everybody can see their neighbors or across the country filming it and giving it to you. But we shall see. First contact. This is the moment when the moon first nicks the perfect circle of the sun. Do not look directly at the sun. But if you're wearing approved eclipse glasses, you will notice a bite, a little piece missing on the sun. For the next hour, this bite will steadily grow larger until the sun becomes a narrow crescent. And during the first hour, daylight will still appear bright. And if you had not known of the coming eclipse, you might not even notice anything is going on. But as the shadows cast on the ground, look at how the shadows are casting on the ground from the leaves of the trees. You'll see an amazing collection of crescents that is the telltale sign of an eclipse that is in progress. Then 10 to 15 minutes before totality, although the eclipse has been in progress for about an hour or so, there have yet been no obvious signs of what is to come. But this will change quickly. You will start to see an eerie quality of daylight. It will diminish minute by minute, and shadows will start growing sharper. You will also start to noticeably feel that the temperature is dropping. If it is a hot day, this will come as a welcome relief. Start to watch animal life, birds and other animals. Watch your dogs and your cats. Watch your animals are frequently reported to noticeably react to the impending eclipse. What do you see or observe in the animals? 1 to 2 minutes before totality, your sensors are now, according to this author, starting to scream. Something big is about to happen. Sunlight looks strangely different. Not day and not night. It's a dim and diffuse kind of sunlight. The sky displays a gradient of colors, dark to the west and blue to the east. If you have a clear horizon, look to the west. You might see mountains or clouds in the distance turn dark. The moon shadows have met them and is quickly coming towards you. Look at the ground, especially white surfaces. You may see the elusive shadow bands, which are sometimes seen just before and just after totality. Shadow bands flicker and dance and somewhat resemble the refractions of sunlight on the bottom of a swimming pool. In the very last seconds before the sun is extinguished by the moon, you may see the very thin crescent of the sun through your eclipse glasses, of course, suddenly break into a thin string of beads. These are called Bailey's beads, and they occur because the last vestiges of sunlight are peeking through the valleys and the low points of the moon. The very last Bailey bead lasts for only an instant, and the breathtaking sight of this last tiny bit of sunlight, along with your first view of the corona, is called the diamond ring. Second, there will be contact and totality. In other words, there'll be an akkad between the sun, the moon, and the earth. Now the moment has come, and it is unmistakable. For probably the first time in your life, you are standing under the shadow of the moon. It is suddenly dark, and there will be an audible reaction from you and others, probably of awe. And if you've been wearing your eclipse glasses, you can take them off. During the total phase of the eclipse, it is completely okay to look at the corona with your eyes and binoculars as long as you see no sunlight. Throughout these moments of totality, you will see something like a 360-degree sunset, brighter towards the north and the south, which are outside the path of totality. You'll notice darkening first to the west, and as the eclipse progresses, the darkening moves to the east as the moon's shadow rushes over you. Do not attempt to take photographs if this is your first solar eclipse. You will be what they call gob, G-O-B, as in boy, not God, gobsmacked. I looked that word up. It's a 1980s term, and it just means kind of like being slapped upside the head, or really it means like being in awe. Of course, I think they should be God smacked you upside the head to show you something marvelous, but take it as you will. Just soak in the magnificent of the spectacle and look at the corona in the sky. If you want to do photography, it's best to either start a camera, a video camera, or still camera in time-lapse mode on a tripod before totality so that you watch totality without fiddling with your equipment and missing it. If you have a video camera or still camera in time-lapse mode on a tripod, set your lens on a wide-angle setting and try to include your family and friends in the view. Of course, that would be optional, up to you. I don't know. Chromosphere and prominences. If you view the eclipse through binoculars, only when the sun is completely blocked by the moon, you will notice an innermost and regular layer of deep red. This is the sun's chromosphere. Of course, chromo is basically color. This is a shallow layer, so it is mainly visible against the side of the moon that has just been or is about to be eclipsed. You will also see what appeared to be several licks of flame, and these are solar prominences, and their number and degree are variable from eclipse to eclipse. And remember, if you can, if you're interested, you can get solar eclipse postage stamps from your local post office. I got them from my local. Some people say they're out and others ordered them online, but they're heat sensitive. So if you're in a cool area, it's completely black. But if you rub it with your hand or go into a warmer area in the house or outside, you'll see the moon over the eclipse. So it's kind of a cool stamp. The stars and the planets. The brighter stars and planets will be visible during a totality. Now imagine, that's going to be, it starts around 9 in the morning for us, and totality is around, I think, 10:15, 10:17. So this means we're going to get to see some stars. And remember, I talked last week about what the stars meant. Here's what this article says. Of course, this is a total secular article. The brighter stars and planets will be visible during totality. A bright star, Regulus, which is the king star, in Leo, which is the constellation for the tribe of Judah, will be visible just to the left of the eclipsed sun. So when the sun is eclipsed, look to the left, and the constellation that you should be able to see and the brightest star in that constellation will be the king star Regulus in Leo, or as we call it, Judah is the constellation for Judah. Mercury is farther to the left and Mars is to the right. Venus, or in Hebrew, Nogah, the brilliant one or the bride, is a considerable distance to the right, but will be the brightest object in the sky besides the corona. So think about that. I mean, if you want to look at the symbolism here, we've got the sun. The moon can also represent the bride as being covered by the sun, which can represent Elohim or Yeshua, is covering or is chad, one with the bride. And then you like have a bride or a witness of the bride over to the right with Venus, which is the brightest star, Noga in Hebrew. And it is a considerable distance away to the right, but will be the brightest object in the sky besides the corona, as I said. In fact, Venus, or Noga, will be visible a few minutes before and after totality. And remember I mentioned last week, she does this, the bride Noga, Venus, does this every evening, or especially before the new crescent. She comes up and announces that the crescent is, right when the sun goes down, is what I'm saying. She follows the sun. The sun goes down, which could represent Elohim. She comes out in her radiant beauty. In the morning, she comes up before, announcing that he's returning, that the sun is returning. And so here we have this again. She's here like I was a witness during this Akkad period of the sun and the moon. And she will be visible a few minutes before and after the totality. So that will be really interesting to behold. While it is possible to put to pick out brighter stars through the sky, don't spend your precious time doing so. Indeed, concentrate your attention on the corona and the light shown in the sky as the eclipse evolves. Third contact, which is called the end of totality. After about 2 minutes, the total solar eclipse will end all too soon. The end of totality will be marked by a second diamond ring, followed by Bailey's beads. Be sure to watch this only with your eclipse glasses back on. You know, I know people would argue, depending on how you decipher this, but it's interesting they describe it as a diamond ring, because you could either look at that as a diamond ring from our cultural point of view, one for Judah, one for Israel, and or for with Elohim and his people Israel, the bride, and or the return of Yeshua the Messiah, because he laid his life down for her and he died and comes again back with a new ring. I mean, that's just another way of kind of looking at it. So pray about that. And if you can get the notes and study, I gave you the links to read the Maseroth book, which Maseroth is not an evil word. It's a word that's in the scriptures. It's in the book of Job. And you can read the book with the notes that Francis Rolleston wrote. Most of it's online. And you can also order the book. And you can start learning. To me, understanding and knowing the symbology of the stars is much like when you learn what the pictograph language of ancient Hebrew is, or what the pictograph is of even modern Hebrew. What does it represent? And then you start noticing things, you know, that you never noticed before, because now you see a picture, now you see a story, now you see depth. And to me, the Hebrew language is like, you know, a children's six-sided building block, like a building block. And every time you turn it, it's the same letter, but it reveals a different facet of that letter and that meaning. And so we have the same thing when we start looking at the words. And, you know, the stars throughout history, though they may have gone to a different language, but for the most part, the stars in the heavens throughout time have not changed their name or their meanings, okay? So that's something to keep in mind when you're studying. It's pretty fascinating. And again, I'll mention for those who didn't get last week that what is written in the stars is very well related to the letters. Ot is a sign, and letters are signs, otiotes, then the Hebrew letters. So again, this, we're just going to review here. This is going over the cities in totality from Salem, Oregon, which means peace or shalom, over Boise, Idaho, which can be wooded, over Casper, Wyoming, which can means Chaldean or treasure, over Kansas City, which is the people of the wind or the south wind, over St. Louis, who represents a renowned warrior, And again, is the threshold for Little Egypt, the crossroads, the gateway to the West. You study that and the arch, you're going to see all the Illuminati stuff there. Then it goes over to Nashville, which is an ash tree, Athens, Georgia, just north of Athena. Just north of Athens, actually. And, you know, I saw Wonder Woman, so I thought this was kind of interesting that, you know, Athena, she's the goddess of war and crafts, and she's a skilled daughter of Zeus. And again, we talked about, if you look at the Greek mythology, you'll see that it's kind of a throw-off of the scriptures. And I personally don't believe what I was taught in public school. I believe that the Hebrew language was first. I believe that everything was first that has to do with Elohim and his people and Israel. So when we look at things that have been perverted and changed, we need to go, what is the original truth that has been perverted or twisted in this scenario? So here we have Wonder Woman, who's the goddess of love, which, you know, we could correlate to maybe Salem or Shalom. And she's also from Athens or Athena, which is, you know, a goddess of war. That movie was just released, and it relates to Zeus, and it's played by Gal Gadot, which is, you know, an Israeli actress. And Gal means wave or heap waves and billow. I think it would be interesting to see what happens this next week. Gadot is also riverbanks. And the last major city is Columbia, South Carolina, which is the goddess. Columbia is the goddess of democracy, and that is all tied into the Illuminati and different things that you can study, different aspects of that, the New World Order. It's also related to the constellation of Virgo, which is the Virgin, which in Hebrew is Bethulah, which is the bride in Hebrew, or the Virgin. So, you know, those are things to look at. Columbus is also related to Egypt and Isis and Sirius and the Mother of God and the Mother of the Earth. And then the Venus constellation is, again, you know, God, the brilliant one. So the next eclipse is going to be 40 months later, almost 7 years, during the first month. The first month of Nisan, right before during the Rosh Chodesh, before Pesach, Passover, right? And so, you know, these are things that we're looking at, and I hope that you got something out of this. I hope you enjoy the notes, and that you're praying and you're seeking the Father. And do some study on those biblical things that I sent you guys out. And if you need to catch up with the last show, then do that. I want to thank you for being here. Remember to look on the website tomorrow, remnantremedy.net, and look for the 15% solar savings that we will have between now and the 15th. I will tell you that if you order after Wednesday of this coming week, your order may not go out until the following week, depending on what happens with traffic and internet, etc. May or may not be a problem. But I want you to know that. And then, of course, remnantremedy.net/radio is where the archives are, underneath the category of Moedim. Thank you so very much for being here, and I hope to be back with you next week. May your garments always be white, and may your head lack no shemen. Shalom.